I've had a cold all week, and on Monday I sounded quite a bit like Henry Kissinger, and so hopefully my voice will hold out. I got some water here, but if I start denying that I've ever bombed Cambodia towards the end of the talk, you'll know that's my inner Kissinger coming out, and I apologize for that. Anyways, I appreciate the introduction. And the opportunity to be here talking to everybody. It's been some interesting talks already. The topic, as you see, is in generally, I came up with the title first and then wrote the paper, and then I was kind of locked into the title, but it's poverty as it relates to families in Canada. And but before I do that, as a journalist, you're always looking for interesting ways to start your stories and little stories to tell, and so I'd like to go with a little bit of a broader perspective just as the lead for this talk. So I'm going to, you can't get any broader than world poverty, so I'm just going to spend a little bit of time on world poverty because there's some interesting lessons here that I think will eventually apply to the Canadian situation. I don't know how many of you are aware, but in 1999, the UN set for itself what they called the Millennium Development Goals. These were sort of aspirational objectives for what they were going to do because the millennium was upon them. Some of them, there's eight of them. Some of them are kind of hard to get your head around. But the first one is obviously the most important. It was to reduce the percentage of the developing world living in extreme poverty by half by 2015. And it's a fairly aggressive goal, I would say. Extreme poverty here is defined as life on less than $1 US, which is also now life on less than $1 Canadian. and here you can see how it's not that the UN has done this, but this was an aspirational goal for the members of the UN. And actually, the progress is quite impressive. I don't know how many of you were aware that we've made this kind of progress. I certainly wasn't until I stumbled upon the report this summer, but not only has the absolute number of people living in extreme poverty fallen over this time, but the percentages have fallen much steeper, and this is, keep in mind that population growth is much higher in the developing world than it is in the developed world, so these percentage figures actually get tougher and tougher to reach as you go along. And the UN admits that they fully expect that by 2015 we'll have met the goal. It's quite possible we'll meet that goal earlier, given how far we've come since then. But you don't really hear about this very much. No one goes around saying, yes, we've made some pretty impressive gains in world poverty over the past decade. And why is that? I think one of the main reasons is there's kind of a pathology of pessimism around, and a lot of organizations are mainly interested in telling you the bad news for some reason. The report that these figures come from spent more time worrying about the rise in income inequality in the nations than it did in celebrating the fact that the absolute number has come down. There's also other people that will say, sure, it's come down, but it's come down mostly in India and China. And that's not politically correct in some ways. I know an author like Naomi Klein in Maclean's. We had a lengthy interview with her just recently, and she sort of belittled this achievement because it's India and China. You know, they've embraced globalization and market solutions and trade, and so what? You know, Africa is still a basket case, but. To that I say, a soul saved is a soul saved. A success in one... Oh, it's time to pick up my kids from school. I'll be right back. I live in Waterloo. success should be celebrated, I think, when it occurs. And success can also give us hints and clues to what we should do to address the failures. It's true that Africa is a basket case, but other parts of the world have made impressive achievements, and that's mostly being reflected in there. It's not my intention to wave away world poverty, say that we've solved it at all, but I think there are some things that have happened that are good, and we should recognize that. So with my broad perspective over, I'm going to turn to the Canadian situation. And whenever you give a talk on poverty in Canada, you always have to make this caveat that we don't really have a poverty definition in this country. What we have is a low-income cutoff that's produced by Statistics Canada. It's a complicated measure that looks at what the average family spends on necessities and then calculates backwards. If you spent 20% more than that on your necessities, that might make you someone who's in low income or straitened circumstances, as they say. It's really a measure of relative income inequality. If we doubled everyone's income, they all spent the same amount on necessities, then our low income rates wouldn't change at all, which seems kind of strange. But it's all we've got, really. It's a problem that I'm not going to solve right now. If you want to talk about poverty, you end up talking about low income cutoffs in Canada. And so that's what I'm going to do. I'll make the caveat that it's really low income. But even, you know, my title, Poverty in Canada, the low income dilemma doesn't sound very interesting. Everybody would have left. So you got you end up using the word poverty just because there's a kind of collective understanding of what you're meaning by that. So what do we know about poverty in Canada? Well, certainly like world poverty, I think most people would assume that poverty is a big deal. As I said, I'm not here to wave it away. But certainly if you read the Toronto Star regularly, you'd think that poverty is a really big problem in this country. This is a screenshot from Campaign 2000. That's an organization that's dedicated to eliminating child poverty, which is obviously a noble goal. This, if you go to their website, this is on the on their homepage. It comes up immediately if you type in that address. You get this little box here that says, in the midst of a growing economy, more than 1 million children, 1 in 6, live in poverty, that the rate is up 20% since 1989. I'll come back to this, but I'm just sort of setting the stage. This is what people say about poverty in Canada. Here's another report that came out in the spring from the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. The rich are getting richer. The poor aren't going anywhere. We ignore these trends at our collective peril. It sounds rather ominous. I could go on, but you know, I think you get the sense that there's a lot of groups out there that will argue poverty seems to be getting worse somehow. It's possible even a revolution looms if you read between the lines there. as I said, excuse me, I'm not going to say that poverty does not exist, but I think a lot like what's happened with world poverty, there have been some important gains. As we'll see, I think we should learn from what we can call successes, and we should try to apply that to situations that are still having problems. So while not everything is rosy, I think the more you look, the more good news you just seem to find when you look at Canadian poverty issues. Most of my figures are going to be coming from StatsCan's Income in Canada 2005, which is the most recent figures on this topic. Because this is a conference on family and marriage, I'm going to mostly talk about what StatsCan calls the economic family, which is two or more people who are related by blood, marriage, adoption, or common law. Because that's a unit that is of interest. All in figures are inflation adjusted, etc. So what's happened? What's happened to family? This is median income. I'm sure this is an erudite crowd, but as opposed to averages, median is you take off the top and the bottom, until you end with the middleist group. It avoids the problems of having a very large, Bill Gates in your sample. So you can see here with everything trucked along a little bit, it's kind of cycling. You can kind of see the evidence of the economic cycles in Canada here. But over the last 10 years, we've seen a fairly impressive, not straight line, but certainly some nice gains there. And that seems fairly positive. We had the quote I put up there from the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives said, sure, but it's the rich that are getting all the benefits. So this is my most colorful graph. This is all the quintiles, so these are fifths, bottom fifth, second fifth. You can see the black line, that's the top fifth of the income brackets. They've clearly done the best. But if you look back, we're going back to 1980 here, every line is unequivocally higher than it was at any other time in its past. The red line, which is the bottom 5th is pretty flat, but it is going up. I mean, we'd like it to be a little higher, but we can still say with fairly great confidence that that things do seem to be getting better as we go along. So, as but these are incomes. So, if as incomes are looking better, what can we say about poverty or low income? So, here's families under low income. Again, you can see that same kind of cyclical up and down. You can see the times were pretty good up till 1989. Then we had a recession. So, you can see that kind of movement. Again, though, we are as low as we ever have been in the figures that StatsCan has going back to 1980, so that seems it certainly things aren't getting worse, but they look fairly positive. So we can break this up a little bit by certain families. So the the real good news is the purple dots at the bottom. That's elderly families. So two seniors living together, married couple. That poverty, which was a huge issue in the 1980s, people remember Brian Mulroney being, confronted on the Parliament Hill, etc. People were worried about seniors' poverty and shivering in the dark, eating cat food, etc. It's almost been wiped out. It's down to 1%. That's the lowest rate of LICO that StatsCan has for any of their standard demographic groups. So that's something to celebrate. That's not my main topic here, but I just wanted to point that out. Two-parent families, the black triangles, again, we can see a kind of cyclical movement there. It's actually been a little lower than it has been in the past. In the past, it has been a tiny bit lower than it is today, but it doesn't move very much. And the big story is what we're going to spend a little more time on, is single-parent families. Again, it cycled fairly closely between 40 and 50% as the economy moved up and down, but in the last 10 years we've seen a fairly steep drop. It's still very high. It's in the mid-20s there, much higher than two-parent families, but it certainly has a nice trend to it. So, we're interested in families, but obviously when you're talking about poverty, the group that you're really interested in is children. They're the only ones that don't really control their own situation. They have poverty thrust upon them. They're not able to go out and get a job, etc. So what are the figures look like on children in poverty? Again, you can see it's almost the same chart that we saw for families, which is no real surprise. It's as low as it ever has been. But it's not gone below historic lows. Now, at some point, someone here, some smart person, might say, "Well, wait a minute, Peter. You put up that screenshot from Campaign 2000. It said one child in six lives in poverty. That doesn't square with about 12% there. How does that jive? There's something wrong with your figures." Well, actually. That Campaign 2000 screenshot I put up grossly overstates the situation of child poverty in this country. What they use is before-tax LICO. And the tax system, as you know, provides lots of benefits and credits, as well as taking your hard-earned money. And if you don't use after-tax LICO, which is what Statistics Canada recommends in all their documents, even though they publish both lines. If you just look at before-tax income, you're not looking at the complete income figure. So it's that one child in six figure is an overstatement. It's really one child in 8.4. The 1.1 million children in poverty statement is an overstatement. It's actually 788,000. The 20% increase is an overstatement. It's actually 2%. So that's this is a sidebar to my main story, but you do have to be aware that there's some exaggerating going on, the million children in poverty is kind of a handy a burden to put on people, but it's not really true. So that's what we're doing here. We're sort of looking at these statistics a little more closely. So, if we know where we are with children in poverty, what can we say about the demographics of what kind of families are these children in? And this is just the percentages. So these are kind of like your odds. You know, if you're just a child, excuse me, selected at random, what are your odds of being in poverty given your family situation? Your odds are around 8% if you live with both your parents. Your odds are about 33% if you live with a single parent and other families, grandparents, etc. That's a kind of a small group, but it's I think 11% or so. So if you're playing the odds, if you're a policymaker who's concerned about children in poverty and you're interested in playing the odds, it would seem like you would want to spend a lot of your time on single-parent families. Now, at some point, Patricia may throw a glove across the podium and challenge me to a duel. And it is true, as she pointed out, that the small bar there represents about 400,000 children because there are a lot more two-parent families than single-parent families. The 33% bar, there's about 300,000 children in that group, and the remainder, small group is there. So there are, it is true, as Patricia pointed out, that there are more poor children in the two-parent family demographic than there are in the single-parent family demographic. However, the percentages are far, far greater. If you're interested, if you have limited resources and you're interested in targeting those resources, I would argue that the money is best spent targeting single-parent families. So what do we know about single-parent families in Canada? It's 1.4 million of them. There's 2.2 million children in those families. 80% of them are headed by mothers. If we're just interested in single-parent families in poverty, 92% of them are headed by mothers. So by and large, single-parent poverty is really single-mother poverty. What can we tell about what has happened to the single-parent family over time? Well, the single mothers are now much older than their equivalents were in 1981. You can see that they are much more likely to be under 25. Today, they're much more likely to be in their 40s. Single mothers are much more better educated today. You can see the almost half of them were high school dropouts in 1981. That's fallen by half. Much more likely to have university degrees. It is also the case that you see a lot more single mothers that have never been married. You can see that figure has doubled. Although you can still say with certainty that the majority of single mothers in Canada are divorced or separated. I'm going to look now at the work effort of married and single mothers. It's a very interesting chart. If you look back to the 70s, you'll see that single mothers were far more likely to be in the workforce than were married mothers. The married mother rate has sort of gone fairly steadily and gradually throughout this whole time. The lone mother rate of participation in the workforce has pretty much flatlined for quite a few years there. It went up, and down a little bit. I'm going to argue later this is largely the result of the expansion of welfare benefits through the 80s that made work not so enticing to single mothers. And it's only lately in the last 10 years that we've seen an attempt to catch up with married mothers. And the gap now is between 5 and 7% based on what statistics you use. Single mothers are also less likely to own their own home. They're more likely to live in an undesirable neighborhood. They're unlikely to own major assets. Previous speakers have gone into great lengths about some of the social consequences of single parenthood. I'm not going to do that. If you're looking for a nice, concise view in Canada, I know there's a paper by sociologist Anne-Marie Ambert that came out last year. It's published by the Vanier Institute that covers a lot of that. You can download that from their website if you want. This brings me to the end of the first section of my talk. which was to cover the landscape and look at where we should apply our efforts. Just to briefly summarize where we've gone, we've seen that poverty has largely been a good news story in this country, I think. We've seen most of the lines head down. Some of the claims made by poverty groups appear to be exaggerated and overstated for perhaps political or funding reasons. However, it is true that the biggest component of poverty, the most arresting demographic of poverty in Canada, remains single mother families, even though we have seen, you saw a quite a big decline there from the 50s to the 30s. Even though that has come down quite a bit, it is still far higher than any other group, certainly higher than two-parent families. And so if we're interested in helping children in low income, it seems like we're interested in thinking about things that help single-parent families, single-mother families. And so I'm going to spend the second half, after I have a drink of water, on what we can do to assist single-parent families.